Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Sync for the 26th of April. Let's dive right into issues marked Needs Discussion during Sync and see where we are. Let's start at the top because it's easy and I'm lazy. Number 1865, using this in a constructor results in failed assertion, and 013.1.
I'm not sure if this still needs PR to fix it. We just still need to merge the PR.
Oh, there's already PR. That's awesome. Well, never mind. Definitely doesn't need discussion during sync. Let's pull that label off. Cool. That's like the best. All right, cool. Let's look at 1864. Byte seek or seek of byte seek. Whoa. Flipped out. Okay, well. That looks like it's a subtyping issue having to do with flattening of union types, as far as I can tell.
I may have hit something like this before. I'm trying to think. I think I might have filed an issue ticket that is similar to this, but I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, It's definitely, I mean, yeah, that's, there's no question that it has to do, I'll just put a quick note in here that it looks like it has to do with flattening the unit types. More and more I wonder if we want to eliminate flattening union types entirely. Even though it would result in some sometimes ugly error messages. Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to go ahead and merge 1867, the PR, because all checks have passed. That's the one for 1865. Merged. All right. So 1813 is marked as needs discussion, but I'm not sure that it does need any discussion. Yeah, so it looks like at some point something about the way we're generating dwarf information's changed, probably something I messed up, and we can no longer call functions from inside LLDB, which is, I mean, that's not the usual way that people debug, but it is one of the things that I do when I'm debugging, probably because I'm a terrible person. For example, when debugging the compiler, I often call AST print and things like that. I'm going to actually change this priority and needs discussion because this is not blocking anybody. And it's sort of a slightly unusual debugging technique, but I think it's worth eventually fixing, if that makes any sense. So I'm actually going to lower the priority to medium unless anyone has any objections. All right, that sounds like no particular objections. So before we get into a collection of lovely issues that Paul has opened that are type checking issues, which are really good and important, maybe we should cover any of the straggling ones, because I have a feeling if we get into type checker fun, we will stay there for the rest of the conversation, which suits me just fine. But maybe we should have a look at some of these others. For example, 1186. It looks like, is this still an issue? 1186? Look, last thing we knew was that Benoit thought it was an LLVM bug.
I still think it is, but I didn't file the issue on the tracker.
Okay.
I really have to think about it.
Okay, cool. That's fine. I'm completely baffled by this one because it doesn't look right. it seems like there shouldn't be an issue here. It doesn't look like the code that's being generated is in any way wrong, so I think your theory that it could be an LLVM bug, that's kind of reasonable, actually. I just can't see how landing pad offsets could be related to how we're generating the code. So, yeah. Okay. In that case, 1225... did this turn out to be a GCC specific thing? It looks like it is in fact a GCC specific thing having to do with GCC 6. Yeah, as far as I can tell. I mean, I certainly haven't seen this. I'm not currently using GCC 6 on any system. But it is across LLVM versions. The fact that it thinks that the pass is not initialized is pretty odd, because in Genopt, pass initialization is being done as static initialization. So for example, there's on line 818, there's a merge realloc static initializer. There's a static initializer for dispatch pony context on 514. Yeah, there's a clever these, the heap to stack one, which is the one in question, is statically initialized on line 446 and 447. Static initialization in C++ is constantly problematic. It's awful. It's evil. But there you go. But this seems very. I can't imagine how a C++ compiler could, unless it's somehow eliding one of these. Could it be could GCC 6 actually be eliding that static initialization because it's local to the file and it believes it's never referenced?
I don't think it's allowed by the standard.
Oh, it definitely isn't allowed to. No, there's no question, because static initialization is supposed to be, sort of a protected class, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, maybe it's an issue with the order in which these static constructors are called.
Yep. I mean, that's the usual horror, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, there we go. If anyone happens to have a box that they feel like updating to GCC 6 to test this out, that'd be great. Short of that, I think this is... I don't want to be... terrible about it, because GCC 6 is for real and we're all going to be using it eventually. But this doesn't seem hugely pressing. Okay. We should actually cover a few more of these before we jump into the fun type stuff. Let's look at 1513. If there's any ones that people want to cover particularly, let me know as well. Wow. Okay, that's just bizarre. I remember looking into this. It looks like it's doing everything right up into the fact that until you go to build extract value and it's out of bounds. And that's just weird. I'm not sure that there's too much to discuss for discussion of that. I think that's just some grunt work to track down whatever is causing the bug. For 1576, this is looks to be. Is this particular to 32-bit x86? It looks like it is. Huh. I suspect that there's just something that is not. I don't know. Are there any other outstanding 32-bit issues that we know about? It says the comment says that he thinks it's somehow linked to the off by one stuff in the LSTA, but it doesn't.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm trying to understand what's going on.
Yeah, I agree. He does indeed abort after trying to unwind Ray's exception. It does not hit a landing pad. Wow. He believes there's no landing pad.
Yeah, that may be the same issue.
Okay. All right. I'm going to skip over 1719 because it definitely doesn't compile on 64-bit ARM. No one's tried to make it compile on 64-bit ARM. It would be great if we did. That's super fun, but I know we haven't put any work into that yet, so I don't think we need to go over that particular. I'm going to skip style guide unless anyone has anything particularly they want to talk about with style guide. Anyone? Style guide? Anyone? I will take this opportunity to say what I usually say about style guides, which is that I don't like style guides. But it's obviously true that we sort of have an implicit one, which is really not very nice.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that my dividing line is I don't like style guides for a language. Like, I don't want to present something and say, this is how all pony code should look. But I do think it's useful for projects where you're trying to get people to collaborate, especially when you have maybe a lot of drive-by contributors where they aren't necessarily deeply familiar with the style yet. When they want a contribution, I think having a consistent style within a project is important. I just don't want to get in the position of trying to dictate a style to the community.
Yeah, I think you're totally right. I think you're right on all counts of that. In some ways, I feel like it might be good too, in the sense that we might find that we lighten up our style guide if we actually write it down, in the sense that we might go, oh, actually, you know what? Go ahead and let people do this thing or that thing, or let people have non-trailing white space on blank lines if they want to.
Somehow, I don't think we're going to go in that far.
But anyway, so There you go. By the way, if anybody on the call or anyone listening to this in the future feels like, hey, you know what, I could write a style guide, just do it. Just write a style guide. And don't worry about whether anyone agrees with you, because, boy, the fastest way to find out if people agree with you about a style guide is to post one, because people will respond. Yeah, I think our community is nice enough that we will respond in a way that is not horrible. I sure hope so. Okay, I think that means that we've talked about everything except for this lovely collection of type checking bugs. That sound about right? Okay, then let's talk about some of these lovely type checking bugs. Let's start with 1798.
Yeah, so this is probably the most important of all the bugs, star open, because it's unsound.
Yep, I agree.
So from what I've gathered, more or less, it's, I'm not really sure how the compiler internally handles like the priority of operators between the aliasing and the viewpoint. And I think that is sort of where the issue is coming from.
Okay.
That basically it has this type, this arrow X or something arrow X.
Yeah.
And it aliases that type. And I have the feeling that the alias is applied only to the right hand side of the arrow.
Let's have a quick look at the code.
Yeah, I do think it resolves the arrow first before applying. The aliasing, I think, is applied right at the last step, right before the cap is checked, as part of the cap check function, right?
Looking in the code, alias of an arrow type, what it does is it says get children left and right, and it builds a new arrow type, which is left as it points to an alias of right. Which confuses me, because that's exactly what Paul's example appears to not be doing.
Wait, which file is this?
Sorry. It's alias.c.
Okay.
Source libponyc /types/alias.c. And it's lines starting on line 206, going to line 217. But your example clearly shows this ain't what happening.
But I don't think that's right, aliasing just the right-hand side. Oh, wait, maybe.
Because we should end up with this X bang. So I wonder if this is...
The thing I was thinking of happens in subtype.c when we're... trying to compare something to an arrow type.
Yeah, that is indeed what it sounds like, but it's a subtype.c problem.
If I remember correctly, in that case, the arrow is gotten rid of first before proceeding, and then the aliasing doesn't be checked until cap.c.
Looking real quick here in subtype.c.
Yeah, I think is nominal sub arrow.
It should be in is arrow sub arrow. Excuse me.
I was looking at the second test case, which is just trying to consume an X of type X bang into a reference of type ref arrow X.
Okay, I was looking at that first test case, where indeed it gets In fact, it is post-aliasing, and it says this arrow X any bang. Is that a subtype of this arrow X any? So if we go into viewpoint reify pair, we get ref val and box of x any bang and ref val and box of x any, which okay. So what's happening is in viewpoint reify pair, when we get down to it treating it as ref arrow x any bang and ref arrow x any, for some reason super is, when we do viewpoint reify pair, we're getting that, we're getting the tuple of x tag, x box, x ref, x val, x box, x tag, when we should be getting x iso, x trin, x ref, x val, x box, x tag. So it has to do with viewpoint reify pair on ref arrow x. That's totally not what I expected.
And is that also the case for the second example where we're talking about ref arrow X and X bang.
Ooh, let me try that one. Looks like it's that same reification of ref arrow X. Yeah, it's going to be the same issue. Let me try it real quick, though. Exactly the same issue, is that I broke in the wrong place, that's why. But it looks like it's going to end up being the same issue.
Okay.
So there's something wrong in viewpoint reify pair, in the sense that we're getting the alias at that point. Might not be. It's probably deeper. It's probably in viewpoint reify type param,
right,
where it's happening. Ah. Well, it looks like in replace type that we're only getting alias width when ephemeral is TK aliased, but in any. Ah, check out lines 463 and 464 in viewpoint.c. We're saying we're going to do those with the ephemerality, but what's that the ephemerality of? The type param ref. Damn it. Oh, that really looks like it ought to work, but it's not working. So I think maybe rather than keeping trying to debug it on the call, at least now we have an idea of where this is, that this is a straightforward bug rather than something more complex, I suspect. Does anyone want to volunteer to dive into this one?
I might at some point.
All right, cool.
But yeah, I'm kind of busy this week with other stuff, but maybe later. Yeah,
I understand the feeling. I'm sort of in the same boat. I feel like I would like to sign up for this, but I don't want to. I'm actually all my time where I have a chance to work on Pony right now, I'm working on some garbage collection stuff, so I don't want to pretend like I'm gonna cover it anytime soon because I'm not. Okay, I'm gonna leave a quick note in here.
Okay.
Yeah, if you could include in the note what you expected the results of viewpoint reify pair to be and what they actually were.
Yes.
That should be enough to make it fairly simple for somebody coming in to get targeted in on the right area. Which I might do if I get some other stuff cleared off my plate first, like the exhaustive match and a couple other lingering things.
Coolio. Okay, here we go. Excuse me, sorry. All right. I left a big comment. See what you think with that, Joe, and if that explains what I'm talking about.
All right. Okay. Yeah, that should give enough information for me or someone else to take care of it.
Yeah. Also, also, there's an example of me calling functions while debugging right there, the thing we were talking about earlier in the call.
Yeah, there's an obscure debugging technique.
You know, the thing that I do every single time I try and debug the compiler. All right. Yeah, okay. All right, cool. In that case, let's back out and have a look at 1807. Oh, how interesting. That's a bug. There's really no reason that shouldn't be allowed. How interesting.
It says it works, it occurs with both ISO and TRAN. It works with other capabilities. So I wonder if it has something to do with how the ephemerality is getting applied in cap.c.
Indeed, it could be.
But I don't. Why does it even try to check if foo iso is in constraint bar val when it's in the other one?
I suspect that's a slightly misleading.
Oh, so you mean it failed the first one, so it's showing the error message for the second one?
Good question.
It's almost like that third line where it says constraint bar val, it shouldn't say that. It should say constraint foo iso or bar val.
So this is in is subtype constraint, obviously. So let me call AST print sub like I usually do. Whoa. Wait, what? Okay, this isn't at all what I expected.
It already ditched foo iso by the time you got to that call?
It already ditched foo iso. So our constraint is just bar val.
In reify.c then, perhaps?
I am indeed in reify.c. Constraint is bar val. How can that be?
What is type param?
Type param x, nominal id $1, id bar, x val, xxx. Huh? How that even possible? Type params is type params where X has to be a bar val. You are absolutely kidding me. Oh, wow. It got folded in union flattening. It's almost as if union flattening keeps causing us problems.
Yeah, because foo and bar, they're both interfaces. If they were traits, I bet this wouldn't happen.
That's right. Actually, yeah. Would it not happen for traits? Let's find out.
Paul, did you try it with traits?
I don't remember.
Because foo and bar, they are the same interface.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's still a bug.
Oh, yeah, right? It works fine with traits. Nothing.
Yeah, so it's because the traits wouldn't get folded together in flattening.
That's right. So actually, this is very helpfully letting you know that you've got a problem with your code and giving an error message that in no way illustrates what that problem is. Distinguishable interfaces. On the other hand, allowing, for example, there's no reason particularly not to allow foo ISO or foo val.
Right.
So it has to do with union flattening happening in the constraint type. And more places where union flattening is causing us problems.
Yeah, like we would need to exclude because we're using the issue is we're using is subtype for union flattening everywhere we see a union in the source code.
Yep.
But within a constraint, we would want to be using is subtype constraint.
Yep.
For those unions.
Yeah. Union flattening.
Which I guess you could do by just checking the frame. Right, you could check and see if you're, I think constraint is one of the things that there's a frame indicator for.
Yeah, you can indeed check the frame. Or if for some reason that's not there, trivial to add, right?
Right.
But I think, I'm almost certain there's a constraint entry in the frame because...
Okay, so we don't have to remove union flattening entirely to solve this. There's a pretty easy workaround of just realizing that you're in a constraint in union flattening and using the other subtype function.
Yeah, I think you're right.
But maybe we should discuss again what's standing in our way from removing union flattening entirely?
Yep.
I know, Benoit, you had some comments about that.
With reachability, I think. But I didn't test, so I'm not sure where we are on that.
Okay.
So maybe we should open an issue for to get someone to do an audit of the compiler and see what would be possible to do.
Sounds good.
Okay. There might already be an issue open. I know there was an issue where we were at least starting to discuss this. Not 1562. Oh, right. Okay. 1723, which is a pull request that I did that makes structural flattening happen in the parser and avoid subtype-based flattening. Right, and so we still need somebody to investigate whether gen name type is okay. And also, you know, the gen name type might already have bugs related to non-sorted unions. Okay, it's kind of coming back to me now. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so I think we can move on from this ticket.
All right, cool.
I'm adding another comment to it about the proposed solution.
Awesome. All right, let's have a look at 1809 then. Which is error type in a method step argument causes failed assertion. So
so I think one part of this is that constraints in general have different restrictions than non-constraints. But what I'm not sure is, do type arguments inside constraints, should they have the restrictions of constraints or not? And I don't think so.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
But at the moment, the entire constraint, even like nested types, have the same restrictions.
And actually, I think not only are you right, but I think maybe you're extra right in the sense that I'm not even sure those restrictions are necessary at any point in a constraint. I think we originally had those because it was simpler and we thought that we didn't need to have arrow types as constraints. But much like we currently disallow tuple types as constraints, but perhaps we could allow them, I think we could allow arrow types as constraints and just do it right and problem solved. I don't think there's anything fundamentally wrong with saying the constraint of X is how Y sees something. I don't think there's anything fundamentally wrong with that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So if we simply allow it, is there anything else that we need to do to support it? Or?
Oh, I suspect so, but I don't know what it is off the top of my head.
Well, right. The assertion that's failing right now is because it's not supported later, but it's being led through by the parser.
I'm sorry, I was looking at 1810. What number are we on?
1809.
Okay.
You were very close.
All right.
And 1810 is actually the same issue, I think.
Right, that's why I thought it was in the right place for a while.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, actually, I've looked again. I think 1810 is not an issue, but we can talk about that later.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, in the sense of it's how Y sees Z and sees Z and Y can't see Z because Y can't
exactly,
see
it. Yeah. So
it's just a bad error message.
Yeah.
But a really spectacularly bad error message. That's quite funny.
Sorry, can you explain what the error message should be or why Y can't see?
Well,
because Y is hash any, so there is no type. There is nothing that
It's just a type is not well formed.
Well, it's well formed, but there's no type that can inhabit it. So there's no type that can inhabit that definition. Imagine if the type was how tag sees something, right? Because tag is an acceptable version of any. Well, tag simply doesn't see them.
Right.
What the error ought to say is hash any can be a tag and tag can't see, you can't read fields from a tag, therefore we can't use it as a viewpoint adapter. Okay. And indeed, what this keeps saying over and over again is why tag Z something has no upper/lower bounds.
Okay, so I'm just going to add a quick comment that's going to be discussed in sync. We need a better error message for saying that tag cannot be used as a viewpoint.
Yeah.
Because it cannot view anything.
Yep. That's a really impressively terrible error message that it's giving there. That's like That's like C++ template hell level error level. Just bad. Totally unuseful.
So, real quick, this may be kind of a elementary question in type theory, but can somebody explain to me what upper and lower bounds are in this context?
Absolutely, and it's not elementary at all. It is a really, it's an important question and not a straightforward one. So, a type can, right, okay. So, given a range of types, right, an upper bound is all the types in, or let's say a set of types. Given a set of types, the upper bound is the type that all of your types are a subtype of.
Okay, which could be, you know, at, it could be a union or it could be something more succinct.
Right.
Okay.
The lower bounds is the type that all of your types are a supertype of. That type is a subtype of the of every type in the set.
Okay. So, yeah, that's a great way to explain it. That makes sense. Okay, thanks.
Okay, cool. But it, in no way should you think that that's a bad question. That's like a really, really good question. And yeah, those terms can, I suppose they're not quite as confusing as covariant and contravariant, but they're pretty close.
All right. So sorry, back to 1809.
All right, cool. 1809. Right. What I don't know is if we just lift this, if we just lift these restrictions and implement cap from constraint to figure out a cap for a more complex constraint, is that enough? It might be enough.
Yeah, possibly.
Or if we choose not to do that, we at least need to implement a nice error message instead of the assertion.
Yeah, exactly. A nice error message would be way better than this assertion.
So just, it's kind of both with the one before with the union flattening that has to be different if we're inside a constraint. Should this, the nested type inside a constraint, what kind of flattening should it use then?
Well, I think perhaps we should just be lifting this restriction entirely in constraints.
Well, the question was a little bit different. So just say picture we have, instead of bar with box arrow Y as the type argument, if it was a union type, which flattening method would we be using? Would we consider it to be as in a constraint or not? Like, would it be using the is subtype or is subtype constraint?
That would be, wow, really good point. Thank you.
Because if we just check the frame, that might not be right.
It would not be right.
And also,
go ahead.
Yeah, I had a related question today. Was like, is there any use case for allowing hash read, for example, inside the type arguments of a constraint?
I think so. Let's answer both those questions. The type arguments of a constraint should use is subtype rather than is subtype constraint. And no, you shouldn't be allowed to use hash read inside the type arguments of a constraint because it's not a constraint, it's a type argument.
Right, because that's allowed. And from what I've gathered, so it makes sense, kind of, but it only makes sense for structural types which have either covariance or contravariance type arguments.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise you can never instantiate something which is exactly hash read.
Right.
But it can always be replaced with some more explicit form.
Right.
So I don't think there's any use case for it, but it is allowed by the compiler today.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think it will cause problems, but I think it probably should be rejected anyway because there's always a better way to do it that's less confusing to the programmer.
So should that be open as a separate issue?
Yeah.
Good yeah.
Point. Good point. See, I knew we could chew up all the time on lovely type system bugs.
because I actually realized today that, so in my formal rules previously, I would allow hash constraints inside type arguments of constraints. And I realized today that makes it so much simpler if I don't allow this.
Good.
Yeah.
I like that.
And I think it makes sense to not allow it.
Yeah, definitely. All right, cool. So, I think we talked about every issue, but there's a bunch of PRs as well. And we're a little bit running out of time. Is there anything that people particularly want to go over?
In PRs?
Yeah.
I'd like to discuss about 17 the constant time algorithm typing PR.
Excellent. Me too. So your timing numbers look fantastic. I'm still really worried about ending up with a dense matrix.
Regarding the space, space complexity.
Yeah.
Yes. So I think there are two main ways that we could solve this problem. The first is I noticed that a lot of threads in the program, so that's including threads, interfaces, unions, and intersections, are actually not provided by any concrete type.
Right.
So what we could do is simply remove them from the program when generating code, mm-hmm. or maybe not keep them maybe if some function need them. I didn't deep really deep, so I don't know if it's actually feasible to remove them from the program.
Right.
Or we could just not assign them type IDs.
Right.
I think that would really really lower the memory required.
Okay, that's definitely good. I like that, but that still leaves us with an n squared. It's a smaller n, but it's still an O n squared space complexity.
Yes, but. Yeah, and I think it's not that terrible because in the benchmark I used 1,000 traits, and I think that's a really high upper bound for any program. For example, the whole standard library test route has around 200 traits.
Right.
And it's only I don't have the files in here. If I recall correctly, it was about a 10% increase in the program size.
Okay.
So if we remove the unused threads from the threat matrix, well, I do some more experiment
Okay. So what do you think of the approach of using a function rather than a table lookup? The comment I left up above there, where we generate a function saying, and basically where we pass in a descriptor and we go over those descriptors and we essentially run over a switch statement to find out whether it matches. Because that would let us make it non-dense, right?
Yeah. That could be interesting, but one thing I'm worried about is actually that would be feasible.
Okay.
I was going to say it would be with the just in time scenario, but you address it in your comments. So.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I think I'll benchmark that too.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I think whatever we do, we're going to switch to one of your new approaches because it's definitely better. It's just a question of whether we want to use the dense matrix system that you've got right now or try out this function thing and see if that's any better. But we should definitely adopt one of the two, I think.
Yeah, and do you know if there is a way to force LVM to generate a jump table for a switch?
I don't. And I'm not totally sure we'd necessarily want to, because if we forced a jump table and it turned out that those addresses were kind of sparse, it would be a big, big, big table, right? Because we don't know where it's going to store those type descriptors.
Yeah.
So I would kind of lean towards saying, hey, let it do what it can. I mean, nowadays, switch statements do such a good job with combining binary search and jump tables so that you have collections of jump tables with binary search. Boy, the performance is extraordinarily good, especially with it works really well with the hardware prefetcher and not having cache misses compared to a table scenario. So I'd lean towards not trying to force it to do a table.
Yeah, okay. So I'll do some more benchmarking and
okay,
and
cool.
At the results.
Fantastic. Thank you. All right. Anyone else have ones they want to go over? There's some that I think we should go over, but since we're running out of time, I think we can put that off to next week. Okay, we didn't touch RFCs at all, I'm afraid. Is there anything in RFCs that is desperate? Anyone? Okay, cool. Although, wait a minute. Theodis has got the stuff for the more persistent collections. I totally want those persistent collections. Maybe we should just start that. Is it okay if we pop that one into final vote period?
I think so.
All right. Ready for vote, and then we can get people to vote it, and we'll get it in there next week. Okay, fantastic. Anything else? Anybody? All right, I think this counts as just barely finishing on time. Thanks, everybody, and see you next week.